Welcome into Cairo Nights, everybody. Mason, Mike, a happy Soft Rock Wednesday to you. Hope you're all doing okay out there. 98973 is the State Roofing text line. That's how you can let us know how you're doing out there. Be a part of the conversation here. Shoot us a text. Couldn't be simpler. Frank Shires, you just heard him do the news.
Yep.
He's going to do that again, twice an hour, until everybody goes to sleep except for Frank. And he's still going to do it some more.
Yes, that's true.
All night long. Guys, I have a surprise
to
start
goody.
The show. I got something in the mail today.
Oh.
And as is my style, I will only open it on the air for everybody so we can all share in this moment.
Okay. Who's it
now,
from?
Now, I do have some context, and whose it's from is a big deal. This is astute listeners to the show, eagle-eared listeners, as I call them. We'll remember Templeton,
yes.
Our 14-year-old Cairo Knights fan. He listens every night. I see him on the text line all the time. We actually had Templeton and his mom, Lisa, come in one night and hang out with us. That was shortly before G left the show to go do his thing in the morning. And Templeton asked me just a couple days ago on the text line, hey, did you ever get something I sent you? I said, no. Sometimes things take a while. There's a process. And sure enough, I look in my mailbox here at the station today, and there's an envelope
mm-hmm.
from one Templeton.
Yes.
And included in it is a letter and an object. And I will unfold the letter and read it to you all now.
You have not read this?
I have not read this.
Okay.
Dear Mr. Mace. Nice. Thank you for entertaining me and giving me news every weeknight from 7 to 10 p.m. Templeton. Also, here's a little P.S. When the coronavirus is over, please have another live show like you did in December. He's talking about the Christmas radio theater
yes.
thing headed up by our very own Felix Bunnell at Town Hall. And included is a homemade duct tape wallet from our friend Templeton with, in black tape, my initials on either side, A and M. Templeton,
dude,
this
that's lovely.
Rules. Look, it's got the
that
big,
sweet.
Big bill pocket here, and then it's got the little slots for your credit cards and
it's
whatnot.
It's nice in my wallet.
Templeton, thanks a lot, buddy. That's really sweet.
You know he's going to use it, Templeton. There's no doubt.
Oh, no doubt. No question in my mind. My wallet's falling apart. It's come at just the right time. It's very exciting. That means a lot. That means a whole lot. Thanks so much, buddy. All right. Let's get to some news, shall we? There's a lot of it to talk about today. Specifically, the big story that's on everyone's minds is CHOP, the Seattle Occupied Protest Zone, is now no more. It has been cleared out. The Seattle Police Department went in this morning. They, along with some Bellevue Police and the FBI, early this morning, went into Capitol Hill and swept it out. They started at about 5 a.m. They issued some dispersal orders. You know, anyone who's still here or returns here could get arrested. And they did, in fact, arrest, according to the Seattle Times, 32 people by about 9:30 this morning. It was about 100 police officers with body armor and batons and helmets and weapons. And Police Chief Carmen Best, she addressed the media after the zone was cleared of most of the protesters. Here she is.
This order and our police response comes after weeks of violence in and around the Capitol Hill occupied protest zone, including multiple shootings resulting in many injuries and two deaths.
Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan, she says she ordered police to move in and retake the CHOP, and here she is on why.
It was clear many individuals would not leave, and that the impacts to the community could not be reduced and public safety could not be improved until they did leave.
I'm going to stop here because there's something. Now, look, I was CHOP the best thing that it could have been? Was it the best version of itself? No, I don't think so. It got to a place where, in my opinion, the message got diluted by a variety of things. One is a bunch of other messages. You know, this whole protest movement started out pretty clear, pretty concise about what it was about. It kind of became about a bunch of other things up at CHOP, and it just doesn't. It look, some of my favorite TV shows. Like I wish we could have figured this out. Right, lack of organized leadership was the other point I was going to make too. You didn't know who to go to. if you wanted to talk about stuff.
Right.
We heard community organizers complain about this. They're like, I have an idea. I want to do something, but I don't even know who to talk to.
Right.
Discussions with the mayor you couldn't organize because there was no defined representative. And that's something that I just think needs to be there. And look, I was going to say, some of my favorite TV shows, we were talking about this earlier today, Mike, have terrible first seasons. They need to get their legs under them. They need to figure out who they are. They need to develop the characters, and then they become a much better thing. Now, a TV show is a light thing compared to what we're talking about, but I think the example is there that this was sort of a rough draft of what could have been an effective thing, I think. It's just that we never really got around to sculpting it into something that was effective.
Well, yeah, but I think you're looking at it too narrow of a time frame. I mean, go back and look at some of the sit-ins at Berkeley or sit-ins at Ohio State. Go back and look at the free speech movement and look at a lot of other protests. If you were to look at them the day after the protest happened, you'd say, well, nothing changed. That was defeat.
Mm-hmm.
But what it did do was change a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And it also demonstrated a capacity to hold your ground for a time much longer. If someone had ever said,
right,
you would get the police to withdraw from an entire precinct,
right,
and move away, you would have said, poppycock.
Yeah.
You would have,
yeah,
said, no possible way on the planet is that going to happen.
I mean, I would have said poppycock.
Be so stupid. Right?
Yeah.
You would have said this. And yes, anyone would have in their right mind, including every member of the Seattle Police Department.
Yeah.
So what did happen? Well, something pretty original and pretty significant. Was it perfect? No. And was I even, I'm not a fan of any time that you have violence escalating like that is troubling to me. And that's a point at which they probably should have gone in earlier, honestly, and clean, because it was clear that they did this massive withdrawal and they weren't even really engaged much. I don't know why it needed to go that far. I don't know why they couldn't have gone to the edges of it and stayed at least to protect people against some other people.
Right.
But nonetheless, they did what they did. Both sides were using tactics that they hadn't used before. And we ended up getting out of it with some unfortunate violence, some death. But we also got out of it with this idea that still feels to me like it was a sea change in Seattle on what we're actually paying attention to. Sometimes that is the point of a protest, of a march, of a sit-in,
yeah,
when they block traffic. And I'm not saying I'm a fan of any of these things, having been trapped in them before, having covered them before and been tear gassed before.
Yeah.
But I will say that to look at them on a very narrow time frame, like what did it accomplish and it was too disorganized, that only describes every single protest.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does.
And that is what a lot of folks are saying down there too, is that, like, look, we may not be here physically anymore, but our presence is still here. You know,
if you don't think that this isn't going to have a strong influence on the way the city council negotiates the police budget, you're wrong. I mean, and in fact, the weird thing about it is that I think the mayor got pretty amped up over the protest in front of her house.
Well, that's
that
it.
Pushed her this direction,
yeah,
to lose patience with CHOP.
Yeah.
I think when that happened, ironically, I don't think that was the intent of the group, along with Shama Sawan, who showed up in front of her house. But I bet you that is the actual effect.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. There's a gentleman named Joseph Sutner, who lives in an apartment on Capitol Hill. And we have some sound of him. He woke up to the SPD clearing out CHOP this morning. And here's Joseph.
We woke up probably around 4:30, people kind of in the CHOP shouting to get out of their tents and wake up, and then, you know, police were coming. And then at 5 o'clock is when the police finally showed up.
And so here he is talking about people being pushed out.
They had their bicycles and all their riot gear on, and they were just kind of slowly walking through the CHOP, pushing people southbound, telling them to move and disperse or be arrested.
And as somebody who lives there, he says that he doesn't necessarily fear the protesters, but it was the escalation that got to him.
I wasn't afraid of the CHOP protesters. They did not make me feel unsafe. It is the fear of escalation of conflict when people that don't get along with them come in. That's what made everyone nervous.
And how does he feel about police coming back to the East Precinct?
I don't really feel safe with them here either. I mean, before all this went down, there was the tear gas and everything coming into our apartments. You know, I didn't love that either.
And he's got some mixed feelings.
You don't have to either be for the CHOP or for police. You know, you can be somewhere in the middle, and I think that's where I am.
If this is about protecting, a lot of this is about protecting property, right? There are a lot of businesses up there. We heard a lot about property damage. That was always a part of the story. There were people who lost their lives up there, too. There were shootings. There was violence against people. But I saw video of police officers checking people's ID. This is something that's going around on social media, that the SPD is checking your ID to see if you live there, to like let you in the area. And that is there was a woman arguing with a police officer because she wanted to go shop at one of the businesses nearby. And the police officer was giving her a hard time, saying you can't go there if you don't live here. Maybe that's something that's going to be sussed out in the night, because what happens next is the big question. You know, there's a lot of stuff to work through, and this is very much a long term deal. You know, these changes don't happen overnight.
No, and my guess is that if you're a business owner in that area, they've been pretty noisy, both in supporting, as many of them supported this, but they got weary of it when it seemed to be getting more and more out of control. The business owners in that area would be pretty opposed to making sure that they only got business from people who lived in the neighborhood,
given
that it's Capitol Hill and it's a little bit of a destination from outside of Capitol Hill. So my guess is they'll figure that out very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Where they go from here, though, is going to be interesting. And whether or not we see as many meetings between the mayor and the chief and these folk and the folks who are sort of the leaders in the various groups remains to be seen. But I certainly hope it does. I mean, I think that this I'm hoping that this means that there is a new awareness of the way certain issues need to be dealt with in the community, particularly when it comes to dealing with between police and a group of people who may in some ways fairly and may in other ways unfairly perceive the police's reaction to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that through sitting down and trying to find out maybe a solution, maybe some different ways of looking at it, they can find at least some level of detente, if not actual solution.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the Seattle City Council is now taking public testimony. So in an effort to solve some of the issues regarding the affordability in town and many of the other issues we've dealt with now with the coronavirus, the Seattle City Council today took public testimony before approving a plan to tax companies extra for their high-paid employees.
I own Mollyman's Homemade Ice Cream and feel very responsible for our 90 employees and their livelihoods and health. I urge all of you to vote yes on Jumpstart Seattle.
That's Molly Moon Neitzel. She owns
Molly Moon's.
Molly Moon's, of course. Molly Moon's, if you've ever had the ice cream there, it's dynamite. She believes that the tax will improve housing and transportation for her workers. But some businesses warn that if passed, it will contribute to job cuts and higher unemployment at a time when the city does not need it.
We urge you to utilize the Rainy Day Fund to sustain basic city services and not fund new programs. Seattle faces its worst economic conditions in nearly 100 years, and together we must focus on recovery and not taxing the very jobs that are evaporating.
That was Don Blankney, who represents a business group in town. The so-called jump start tax would apply to most companies with payrolls over $7 million. Small businesses would not likely be affected by it. The full council still needs to vote on it, which could happen as early as next week.
Yeah, they think it's going to raise about $200 million, although we're not sure. Nobody can make any sort of economic forecast at this point in time. So we heard 2 years ago, you remember the head tax, right? There was the big head tax issue. They wanted to raise money off of big companies. But the difference between the head tax and this Jumpstart Seattle thing is that the head tax was all about your total number of employees, right? If you were a company, no matter what your employees made, you were taxed a certain amount based on how many of them you had. And this Jumpstart tax, this Jumpstart Seattle issue, is about salary. It's about how much you get paid. It's about specifically employees making over $150,000 a year, and you get taxed anywhere between like 0.7 and 2.5%, or something like that. It depends on your amount. The vote today was 7-2. The people who voted no were Alex Peterson and Deborah Juarez. They said we should send this thing to the ballot in November instead. Mayor Durkin agreed with both of them on that point. The mayor apparently can still veto this thing, but if she does, the veto could be canceled out as long as six city council members vote to cancel the veto. And like I said, the vote was 7-2 today, so they've got those.
Yeah, they might. So this is what happens now behind the scenes for those of you who don't know. So at a 7-2 vote, that means you've got at least a couple of people who are wobblers, probably. And if those wobblers have some other agenda for their own district that the mayor can make them happy on, this is when you start dealing, if you are operating in the way most cities do. So how do you get to a veto proof? Well, you find somebody who will not vote to override the veto, who may be compelled to if there's some other pet project that they want. Let's just say you're in West Seattle and it's something involving the bridge that you really want.
Right.
This is what could happen behind the scenes. So it's not a veto. If it's 9-0, you don't bother with those negotiations because you're not going to get that many people to peel away. But with one vote difference, you are actually in a position where you can get someone to peel. Now, I don't know that this is what they're going to negotiate. It could be that the mayor doesn't actually oppose this and wants the coverage of a veto-proof vote because then she says, well, my hands are tied. I've got to, you know, even if I veto it, they're going to override it. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to go ahead and sign it. That's a possibility. Certainly, this, which was pushed by Teresa Mosqueda.
Yes.
Certainly, this is a cheaper alternative to the tax pushed by Councilmember Sawant. Given that Councilmember Sawant voted for this,
yeah,
even though she criticized it, tells you that she got what she wanted out of this because she used her sort of much more extreme bill to clear a pathway for this much more moderate bill.
Mm-hmm.
And now the moderate bill has sufficient votes to get it through, and it's going to end up on the mayor's lap. So the mayor's got to figure out what she wants to do with it. My guess is that she will sign it, and we're going to see this thing as a $7 million plus payroll tax, which is not going to be a whole bunch of businesses in Seattle, but it's going to be a bunch of big ones you've heard about.
Yeah, most definitely. There are exemptions, grocery stores and, hospitals and nonprofits, some of them. So, man, politics and pro wrestling are the same thing. Like, everything you're talking about, all that backdoor wheeling and dealing and positioning.
I was going to say, Mike behind the scenes.
I love it. Coming up next, guys, Rachel Bell. We're going to talk, do you have a work spouse? Do you have a work wife or a work husband? 98973, Texas, let us know. So we're going to talk about it next with Rach. Coming up. Stay tuned, everybody. It's Cairo Nights. About you, Rachel Bell.
No, she's not. Text 98973 if you've ever made love the whole night through. And I'm talking 8 hours.
Woo.
8 hours. Wait. A proper night's sleep.
Hold on. You don't have to field the text line. You don't have to deal with the responses that are now going to be coming in.
I know. That's why I enthusiastically asked the question.
And we mean with someone else.
Let's be completely clear.
Not the master of your domain situation.
Oh, my goodness. What are we doing on this Soft Rock Wednesday? We're out of our minds.
I don't know. Well, this one, Mike's going to set this one up.
Yeah, I'll set this one up. So we were the other day talking about the term work wife or work husband, that person that you get close to at work and you have sort of a weird spousal relationship with at work, and you end up close to this person. And I asked at one particular point, Rachel, I think I was talking to Rachel, and I said, so what happens if you need to get a divorce from your work wife or work husband? How does that actually come about?
And I said, oh, I've dumped two of them.
You're on your third work partner.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, you go out on a date with someone and you're really excited about them and you think they're so great. And then you hit the point in the relationship where they start being themselves.
Right.
And you're like, oh, man. And it's like just far enough along that you actually have to break up with them. But it hasn't been that long that you're super committed. I mean, it's kind of the same thing at work. You're like, oh, my God, this person's so fun. They're my island in this, you know, ocean of like work, meh. And then they start to really be themselves. And you're like,
What have I done?
Yeah, I'm trying to think, though, how I divorced my two work husbands, because one of them I really took a real 180 on, where it was like,
are we naming names here?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not like they know. It's not like, oh, this is a joke. Neither work here anymore. Okay. Maybe that's how we broke up.
Maybe that's how.
I think I just started giving the cold shoulder. You know, you go from laughing at a joke to being like,
Right. To just not taking your headphones off and ignoring them.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
a power move.
Have you guys had a work spouse?
You know, I think I did back in, definitely did, back in California. Because I was working in the bureau for the Sacramento Bee, the Capitol Bureau. And absolutely, because it was a really smaller group of people. And so you ended up just pairing up with one person who you ended up being close to. Or maybe they gave you good advice and you ended up, well, then you go into lunch together. And pretty soon it's kind of this weird relationship. And the weird thing about having a work, and I've got a couple of friends who've had the same thing, is there becomes, if you've got, for example, like a real wife or a real husband or a girlfriend or a partner of some sort, you have to at some point explain the other person's constant presence.
Right.
You know, like you've been hanging out with this person a lot, because then you have to explain, no, this is just the work relationship, nothing more than
that. We're not making love the whole night through.
Absolutely.
Is, I think, the way you word it.
Or we're making work the whole day through. Which is.
So I'll save my TPS for you.
Exactly.
Baby. I had a,
nowhere near as good of a song.
No. But you know what? It's not all about catchiness sometimes. It's about content.
Yes, accuracy. The hallmark of good songwriting.
I had a situation years ago. So 10 years ago, I lived in Japan and I taught English. And the teachers were always coming and going, because you would usually stay about a year and people came at different times. And so this new guy came from New Zealand, and immediately I could not stand him. Hmm. He used the phrase, "That's gay," and that was offensive to me.
Yeah.
And it was just somebody that I just didn't like him, and no one at work liked him. And then all of a sudden, I don't even know why, I can't remember, we started hanging out and we started having all of our lunch breaks together, and then we started playing Scrabble at Starbucks on the weekends. And then we ended up taking a vacation together for a week, and
wow,
he became one of my closest friends there. And I've never had that situation before where you've gone from hating to loving.
Yeah.
And then I was just in New Zealand last year and I saw him 10 years later.
Really?
Yeah.
And?
Still a great guy. I couldn't even remember why I didn't like him.
Wow. Have you guys ever had any feedback? I'll get to mine in a second, but have you had any feedback from your significant others at the time? Was there any sort of, if you were in an opposite, because you're both heterosexual as far as I know, if you had a work wife or work husband of the opposite sex, did your partner get jealous? Was there any tension in that regard?
Not in my life. At least they never said anything.
I'd say initially in mine. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because I usually have a lot of friends who are women and friends who are men, I would say, but the tension goes away pretty quickly. I mean, I don't have a track record of that sort of behavior.
Right.
And I think that generally once you start including your partner in from time to time, if you're going out to lunch or something like that, and they see that there's nothing, and the other person also has a partner of their own, it just happens to be a relationship that gets close via work. But we still have the open mystery, like, then how do you divorce this person? I mean, if you do end up in a situation where I don't like hanging out with this person, or that person maybe takes it a little too seriously, or that person wants to push the relationship farther. In some cases, they'll make it very clear that you have to just stop talking at all. But in other cases, you just sort of lose interest. But this is a person you've been spending a disproportionate amount of time with.
Right.
There's no nice way to
do it. And you can't run from work.
Because, it's not like with a partner where you split and then you don't have to see them anymore.
Exactly.
Because they're still there. Yeah, there's really no way to do it except for pulling kind of a middle school mean girls situation where you kind of just ditch them, you know, and you're like start hanging out with someone else. Either way, it's going to hurt.
You put them in the burn book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I lost my work husband to a relocation, Matt Pittman.
That's right.
He works here at the station. You guys probably know Matt. He was the best. He was the greatest guy, and we just got to be buddies, and we would hang out all the time and kind of just, you know, talk. And then that turned into we would go shopping on the weekend. Like Matt, I was talking about how I never buy new clothes, and I ran out of like nicer kinds of clothes. And Matt's like, "That's it. Like, we're going to Nordstrom." So he's like,
"Cue the movie montage.
I'll pick you up on Saturday."
Yeah.
He shows up. I guess I could say this now. He shows up in a Cairo radio vehicle. And we go over to Factoria and we go shopping. And it was like, it was the best experience.
Did he have good taste?
He did. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He knew what was up.
Yeah.
He helped me out a lot.
You never had to divorce them. See, that's better. Have them leave before you want to divorce them.
That's what I'm saying. It's all about timing, or so I hear. Yeah. If there's anyone, well, we'll have to get to it after the break because we're going to be out of here in just a second. But if there's anybody who has any advice for how to divorce your work spouse, 98973.
And my original texting or maybe offer still stands Rachel. About or, the Whitney song.
Or maybe get through counseling. Maybe there'd be some sort of work spouse counseling. And maybe the relationship doesn't need to end. And you can still work on it.
Maybe we can just whip up a pamphlet.
I want to hear from someone in HR, because I'm sure this has come up where someone has gone to HR and said, how do I break up? Or I was broken up with and have had to have a little counseling session.
Mm. Anything to plug, Rach?
Always be plugging, says John Hodgman. Yeah. I'm plugging that I'm taking tomorrow and Friday off. I'm very happy about that.
That's nice.
Also, I have a podcast called Your Last Meal. Listen to it. The newest episode is with Rose McGowan. I'm really excited about the episode that's coming out next with Danny Trejo.
Awesome.
He has been the bad guy in more than 300 movies, and now he owns a bunch of restaurants in L.A.
And how many times has he been killed?
65. It's the record. He's been killed more than any other actor in a movie.
Incredible. And love Danny.
Love that. Alive to talk about it somehow. Yeah.
Thanks.
YourLastMealPodcast.com.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks,
Rachel. We'll be back with Cara Nights after this. Welcome back to Cara Nights, everybody. Who knows this music? 98973. Maybe I'll give you a little hint. You want a little hint, Mike Lewis?
I always like a little hint.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Cultural 90s totems, Beavis and Butthead, are in the news. And I'll tell you, there's just something I enjoy about reading an article in the New York Times about Beavis and Butthead. That contrast.
Do they have last names?
Me. I don't think so. No, I don't believe they do. I know they met their dads in the movie. They don't know who their parents. It never really is explained who their parents are. They just kind of like hang out in this house on the couch and watch TV, and then they go and work at their fast food job where they put things in the fryer that shouldn't be in the fryer and are continuously fired. If you don't, I mean, you know Beavis and Butthead. Everybody knows Beavis and Butthead. 1993 to 1997 on MTV, it was really what put Mike Judge on the map. Mike Judge is not only the creator of that show, he voices both the characters. He went on to make King of the Hill, which he did a lot of voices for. Silicon Valley on HBO, which is a fantastic show. I hear from people in the tech community that... this is another thing we were talking about. You know how you were saying people say that like Scrubs is more accurate to how it is to work in a hospital than ER?
Right.
Silicon Valley is exactly what it's
Yeah. I mean, it sits so close to home. It's funny because I don't know if you ever tried talking to anyone in Portland about Portlandia.
Oh, right.
And they get kind of sensitive. Like,
they get very defensive.
You ask about it, they're like, yeah, it's kind of funny. I'm like, no, it's
like more, you have a bird on your bag.
It's more than kind of funny, but they're kind of sensitive because it hits a little too close to home. And the funny thing is that this is why I never watched Beavis and Butthead.
Too close to home?
It hit, like, I grew up with them.
Right.
Like, and it just, like, at times I'd watch it, I think, like, I know that's supposed to be funny, but it just kind of hurts.
Yes. Well, we get another chance, everybody, to get sensitive about it, because the reason we're talking about them is they're coming back. They have a deal with Comedy Central. They're going to put up some new episodes.
Are they older?
No, they're the same age, I guess.
I would have liked to have seen them get older.
According to the news release, Comedy Central says Beavis and Butthead will find the characters entering a whole new Gen Z world and dealing with meta themes relatable to both new and old fans, Gen X parents, and their Gen Z kids. It's a part of a deal inked with Mike Judge that is going to have more future spinoffs, more specials. So there's going to be more Mike Judge content on Comedy Central, which I am all for. He also wrote and directed the movies Office Space and Idiocracy, which are just classics. I mean, right. Mike Judge... He doesn't strike out.
No,
Rarely.
Rarely.
Although my guess is that, so what happened, tell me again who's responsible for South Park?
Oh, Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Right. So if I were Mike Judge, I think I would have had this hot coal of jealousy about South Park because it did a lot of stuff he didn't do.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know, because that, weirdly enough, that cartoon became, as The Simpsons was in decline for social relevance.
Yes.
And that thing became one of the smartest shows in all of television.
Yes.
And I imagine and even though Mike Judge has fabulous fame everywhere else and success everywhere else, I'm looking at that because that's something he would have been capable of.
Very much so. Yeah.
He's probably just like, you know, the whole time. And my guess is that's why we're seeing Beavis and Butthead come back in a new social dimension.
Yes. The quote,
and I'm just guessing, completely guessing on that.
The quote from Mike Judge is, "It seemed like the time was right to get stupid again."
Fair enough.
Which I don't blame him for.
But he's not stupid.
206. Thanks, Cairo Knights, for sharing the good news. Beavis and Butthead is coming back.
We do have one thing I will credit Beavis and Butthead for.
Mm.
And I really got to say, in my heart of hearts, I deeply appreciate the show for this. Kip Winger blames the demise of his band literally on Beavis and Butthead. Because they would use Winger as the insulting, like, Winger fan.
All wore band t-shirts,
exactly.
And their neighbor, who they hated, who was a dork, always had a Winger
shirt on. And literally, in one rock and roll history book that I read, Kip Winger goes on, he's still wounded by the fact that Beavis and Butthead called out Winger. And so Beavis and Butthead will always have a place in my heart.
No date on when it's coming out, so keep your eyes peeled. We'll be back, folks. More Cairo Knights after this. Thank you.